Hello and welcome to Beyond Reproach. This is Tux Lurzel.
Stephanie Domingo.
We come to you from Bushwick, Brooklyn, where we record on land belonging to the Lenape Nation, a nation that is one of many still very much out here doing its thing, and we would like to acknowledge that. So this is the show about scandals and scandalousness in American politics and government.
Tis
indeed.
Replied on Helga?
Yes. Kip us for breakfast.
No one knows what we're talking about.
One of these days we're going to do maybe a Patreon video where we talk about all of our favorite Simpsons references.
It's going to be a long video.
The fact that we have all of these references, but we only like two or three seasons from way back in the day.
Season 4 through 6.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Way early Simpsons. But
the golden age.
Yes, exactly. When Conan O'Brien was a writer on the show.
Head writer.
So welcome to us. We be swearing, we be drinking, and we be referencing The Simpsons.
Yes, without any explanations sometimes.
Absolutely.
Y'all just got to keep up.
Okay, so we're drinking. We're even drinking.
I was about to say, we're what?
So last week...
I'm drinking.
Exactly, yeah. Last week, we talked all about the history of punch.
Yes.
And today, we're finally getting around to drinking some. Even drank in some.
Yes, I'm excited. It looks very cute.
If you guys haven't listened to that mini-sode yet, last week's mini where we talk about the history of punch, I highly suggest that you go back and listen to that first and then come back to this, because I'm dropping a lot of like concepts about what was used in early punches and why. I mentioned this in the last mini-sode, but when Stephanie told me that her story was from the 1670s, my immediate reaction was just, no, with lots of like uppercase, lowercase O's.
Yeah, I felt really bad.
It's fine. I'm glad that you did it now, because I got the chance to research like the history of punch, and I got to do that mini. And that research was really fun for me, actually.
Okay, good.
I love being able to like trace the lineage of cocktails back to punch, and then punch back to like
whatever.
Yeah, the British expats in India trying to like make artificial wine out of lime juice and Batavia arrak.
Very confusing.
Yeah. As we learned last week, punch was a relatively kind of a new phenomenon in the 1670s. It had only been around for a handful of decades and really had kind of just made it to the colonies maybe 10, 20, 30 years earlier. Mm-hmm. So recipes from that era are really hard to find, but I was able to find a recipe from 1668 in David Wondrich's book, Punch. That was the earliest recipe he included in the book. And it's actually so early that it actually predates the popularity of the use of oleosaccharum.
Oh.
So this recipe just calls for lime juice, and no, you don't use the lime zest at all, which is very strange for an early punch recipe. Hmm. But it's like even earlier than an early recipe, you know? But it still calls for plenty of fancy ingredients. For example, it calls for a small piece of ambergris. It also calls for something called Gula Jawa or Gula Jawa, and it calls for something called Batavia arrak. When I told Stephanie this, do you remember what you said? I was texting you and you were like,
don't do it.
These are not real words.
Oh, yes.
You're like, this is not a cocktail recipe. This is an incantation.
Yes, yes.
And I'm surprised the next ingredient it calls for is an eye of newt.
Yes, I did say that. Yes. What's the last one? Something arrak?
Batavia arrak. Yeah.
These are words.
Yeah.
Ambergris. Is upsetting.
Yes. Well, we're about to get into why ambergris is upsetting. So for those of you who don't know, ambergris is a waxy substance that is produced by sperm whales. When certain sperm whales, this doesn't happen to all sperm whales, but when a whale eats a squid, the little claws or like beaks or whatever they're called on the squid irritate their stomach.
Okay.
I'm sorry to do this to you, dear listener. I'm doing this
to you.
And
I'm also sorry, Stephanie. Go on.
Dear Stephanie. But basically what happens is the beak or the claw or whatever of the squid gets coated in this waxy substance in their stomach, and then the whale vomits it up. And then it floats around in the ocean, essentially like fermenting in seawater for a couple months until it washes up on shore somewhere. And then it is collected. people literally, it was their job to like fermented, comb the beaches.
Like how there's like
just
yeast
sort of like in the sun. Not really. Oh. Fermenting is probably the just aging, I guess, is probably okay. More appropriate. But just like sun and seawater and salts.
Yuck.
Yeah. And then people like literally made money by combing the beaches looking for these blobs of ambergris that wash up on shore.
Did they use it for candles or something? Or
they
oil?
Used it for the most popular application was to make perfume.
Yes, yeah. yes.
So this
how
sort
they
of like
found
aging,
that out
I know,
is
it's
bizarre.
So weird. Yeah. So this aging process supposedly makes ambergris have this sort of slightly sweet and floral and a little bit sort of a soapy smell and flavor.
Terrible.
That people lived their lives for. Ambergris has always been very expensive, but today it's wildly expensive. But even back in the 1600s, it was very expensive and hard to get. But yeah, people made perfumes with it. People were also making medicines with it.
Oh, okay.
Candies.
Ew.
Would be flavored with it. And cocktails and punches would yuck. Be flavored with,
I'm sorry.
With ambergris back in the day.
Tim will edit out all those yucks.
That is the appropriate reaction to the discussion of ambergris, I think. But if it were not stupid expensive and hard to find, I absolutely would have tried to put it in this punch today if I could have reasonably got my hands on some. But David Wondrich basically says there's not really a good substitute. So just leave it out. It's
I love
not,
it.
Yeah, it's fine. Just leave it out. The recipe that we're drinking today, rather than being like an exact recreation of the 1668 recipe, is probably more accurately like just inspired by that recipe from 1668. Besides the fact that some of these ingredients I just cannot get, like ambergris, a lot of these ingredients also wouldn't have been available to people in colonial, well, before America was America, but in
because it's an import, right?
Yeah. The recipe was written down in England, okay. So it calls for a lot of Indian and Indonesian ingredients that would have been hard to get in colonial America definitely. In the 1670s. So I have been forced to make a bunch of sort of substitutions and tweaks to kind of try and make it truer to what we would have had access to in early colonial America. So the recipe originally called for Batavia arrack, which was a form of arrack that was made in Indonesia using red rice and sugar cane.
Mm-hmm.
That would have been very hard to get in the colonies. And in the 1670s, we started substituting dark rum from the Caribbean. So that's what we're using today.
Perfect.
This recipe also calls for something called gula jawa, which is a natural sugar. It's got this dark and kind of funky flavor. It's made from Indonesian coconut palms. In the colonies, we would have likely just used colonial Caribbean sugarcane sugar. So I tried to find a raw, unrefined sugarcane sugar, and I found something called jaggery. On Amazon. Jaggery is actually from India, but I feel like it's probably pretty close in flavor to what they might have been making in the Caribbean mm-hmm. in the 1670s. We tasted jaggery on its own.
Yeah, it was good. It tasted to me kind of molassesy.
It very much tastes like a dark brown sugar. It's very molassesy.
But then there's minerals, so it also tastes like Ovaltine.
Yeah, yeah, it's very minerally and earthy and kind of irony.
Yes.
It tastes very irony.
Yes.
It's good. It's just, it has a very strong flavor. It's not just sugar. It has its own.
But it's sweet, so it's delicious.
Absolutely, yeah. If you can't find jaggery, you don't want to hunt down jaggery. It is available on Amazon for pretty cheap, but you get a bunch of it, and what are you going to do with it?
Yeah.
You can use any dark raw sugar that you can find in the grocery store, demerara sugar, muscovado sugar. You could even use sugar in the raw.
Oh, okay.
It's not going to be quite as complex as jaggery is, but it's fine. I wouldn't use white sugar for this, though, because it doesn't even have a portion of the flavor that this like dark, caramely, molassesy flavor that you expect. So this recipe also calls for lime juice and nutmeg, and it says that it can be diluted with either water or, if you're feeling fancy, green tea.
Which you are.
I am fancy. Well, I feel like, especially since I'm leaving out the ambergris, I had to go green tea.
Yeah.
I needed to plug some of that flavor back in.
Yeah, and I've always wanted to try a punch with green tea.
Yeah, exactly. So this is not an exact recreation of that 1668 recipe, more just inspired by it that calls for early colonial American ingredients. So I am calling this the early colonial rum punch.
Cool.
Again, there's no oleosacrum in it. If we had been looking for something maybe even 10 years later, it would have. Also, I just want to note that I have scaled the recipe down. I did still make it in sort of a big batch, like a punch, but I scaled it down to sort of a half pitcher size.
Yeah, like a carafe.
Yeah, just because it's just the two of us. I would say this recipe probably makes about 4 small servings, maybe like 3 larger servings.
Okay.
Yeah. So let's take a sip.
Yeah, let's do a little cheersy cheers.
When I was a kid at school learning the golden rule, teacher often used to say, if you don't tell a lie, there's not a reason why you can't be like Washington someday. How could Washington be a married man and never, never tell a lie?
Ooh, okay.
It's
good.
It's kind of spicy from the rum, yeah. I think. It tastes a little acidic, but you don't really taste lime at all. No. It's very sort of earthy from the jaggery, I think. But I can see how that sort of tastes a little bit like a sweet wine.
Like, oh,
if
yeah.
that's what they were going for, is trying yeah. to recreate the flavor of a sweet
totally.
Wine,
mm-hmm.
that's what it tastes like.
It does.
Sort of.
Yeah, like kind of funky version,
yeah.
but close.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And then the nutmeg on the...
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, you can really more smell the nutmeg than mm-hmm. taste it, but...
Yeah.
It's very nice.
I like it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I'm going to jump right in. My story is kind of big today. For at least 400 years, race has been this lens through which the country is determined who gets the full benefit of citizenship mm-hmm. and who most certainly does not.
Yes.
Historians who've studied race and, like, I guess, racial thinking have traced it back, just the concept of race, to the colony of Virginia.
Really?
Okay. Yes. To the birthplace of the Revolution and the largest slave-holding state.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. It's this contradiction between freedom and slavery that's kind of at the heart of who we are as a nation.
Absolutely.
Yes. Right? So on September 19th, 1676, 100 years before the Revolution, a man in his armed rebels took over the capital, Virginia's, like, Jamestown.
Wow.
Threatened the mayor and changed our country forever. Have you ever heard of the man named Nathaniel Bacon?
No.
Or Bacon's Rebellion?
No, not at all.
Oh my God.
New story.
Yes.
Yeah, so,
so he plays a starring role in my scandal today. He was the man who said, the poverty of this country is such that all the power and sway has gotten into the hands of the rich. Wow. He left out the fact that he was rich. Extremely rich.
Yeah.
But he was giving the girls fantasy.
Uh-huh.
You know?
There are a handful of rich people who still know what's up, even though they have money. Some of them at least
Name
have an
two.
Idea. I mean, Bernie Sanders is rich.
Oh, that's true. Okay.
That's one. That's all I can name
there
off
we
the
go.
Top of my head.
Knew it. Okay, oh. So my scandal today is Bacon's Rebellion and how in its aftermath, the construct of race was reverse engineered to maintain ruling class power. Many people consider this the first armed insurrection in the new world.
Mm.
So I'm going to start with a quote. I'm not doing a proper cheers.
This is bullshit.
I know.
I'm going to drink anyways.
Do it.
I'm going to drink to your quote.
In honor of Black History Month, I wanted to share one of my favorite Toni Morrison quotes. I consider her the best person to ever come out of Ohio. I think the list begins and ends with her.
And you.
I'm not in that.
I know.
No. Just Toni. I will fight anyone who says anything to the contrary. Okay. So she said, the real enemy is, and to know the function, the very serious function of racism, which is distraction. It keeps you from doing your work. It keeps you explaining over and over again your reason for being.
Mm.
Right? So the first English settlers weren't the industrious sort that we learned about in school. They were actually confused by work. They didn't really get it in, like, you know, same.
Yeah.
So everyone's favorite colonial foot soldier, John Smith, he had to organize these men who were mostly like, they were mostly just men of leisure or people who were like skilled carpenters. You think like craftsmen mostly?
Sure.
And just like rich people.
The Craftsman makes sense for like the first batch that you send over to set things up.
Yeah.
But sending over the leisure class
to
be the first ones here to set things up.
Yep.
That's a bad choice.
Yeah, it was a bad choice. So John Smith, he had to organize these men. He almost like declared a type of martial law. He organized them into work gangs and forced them into the fields.
Wow.
Because without that, like, he knew the consequences of not having enough people to work the land.
They would have starved and died.
Exactly. He and some of the people who were in the colony at this time, they were very aware of how tenuous their life in the new colony could be. Many of them were survivors of the winter of 1610, which was known as the starving time.
Oh, wow.
It was bad. Like, colonists, they got really, really hungry. A lot of them abandoned camp and moved in with native people because they knew that they would be fed,
at
the very least. Like, they weren't going to let them starve.
Sure.
And the ones that remained, they became like foragers. They just ate nuts and berries. A lot of them died. There are a lot of accounts of some of the colonists digging up dead bodies to eat to get through that winter.
Holy shit.
It was a desperate time. A very desperate time. But native people who were existing in the same area, they were totally fine.
Uh-huh.
You know, they were living in sync with the land. This was not their first winter.
Yeah.
So historians suspect that there might have been a kind of like frustrated rage at their own like ineptitude to take care of themselves, that these Virginians were especially ready to be put into an environment that like lifted them above others, despite, you know, having eyes that saw, you know, so much evidence to the contrary, like of them being superior.
Yeah. I never really thought about that in England, society had already existed for hundreds of years, centuries, and they had a very distinct class structure with, you know, like the whole like upstairs, downstairs. There's people that are there specifically to take care of you so you don't have to do anything.
Anything, yeah.
I never thought about the fact that had to build that immediately because
it or you would die.
Yeah.
I want to say, I took this out of my outline. I want to say there was, in the original camp in Jamestown, I think there were 500 people.
Uh-huh.
And within one winter, they were down to 60.
Jesus.
Like, so many people died.
Wow.
Or ran off to join the natives.
Wow.
Yeah. One bad winter. The natives weren't digging up their, you know, meemaw to eat,
exactly,
you know, they were, they knew how to survive in the land.
There's like that famous missing settlement, Hashtag History did one of their very first episodes, Roanoke,
like
settlement in Roanoke. They set them up in Virginia, set them up, sailed back to England. When they came back, it was gone and nobody could ever figure out what happened.
They probably just died.
Yeah. But there's all these theories about what could have happened at Roanoke.
They fucking died.
Or they moved in with Native Americans.
Or they moved
in.
There's
actually a lot of evidence of like in that area, Native people with like blue eyes or something. Yeah.
Oh.
So there's a lot of evidence.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Okay. I need to listen. That's actually really interesting.
But hearing what you're talking about makes it make so much more sense. Like, of course Roanoke failed.
Yeah. Oh, it was brutal. They had no idea how to build a society.
Wow.
Like with their own hands.
Well, because,
they're just like,
yeah, you're like, you've had the benefit of centuries of society just existing before you.
Yeah.
And then you come here and just expect things to be the same. And there's no one here
to do
things for you.
Yeah. You have to do for yourself.
Wow.
Or perish. And most of them perished. So it took the colonists a while, but they finally, thankfully, got a handle on food production.
Yeah.
But then they set their sights to making that money, honey.
Sure.
They found a cash crop in tobacco.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't like sugar, like it wasn't as profitable as sugar, but
it's
still...
But they could grow it in Virginia.
Yeah, they could grow it out in Virginia and they could export it to England.
Okay.
At a pretty penny. So it did what it needed to do.
Sure.
And overnight, it kind of transformed Virginia's colony from like a marginal society where, you know, they were struggling every winter to a place where some people could get really fucking rich. There were a select few that were able to like roll in monies, like Scrooge McDuck style, but they needed a ton of free labor.
Imagine that.
Free labor was in short supply in Virginia at this time. For a number of reasons, the biggest being that the native population had already been shot or come in contact with dirty legs.
Yes. passed away from smallpox or whatever.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the ones that remained were harder to enslave. The colonists, they weren't picking up native peoples en masse and then like putting them on a boat for 6 months and then dropping them off in like a foreign land where they didn't speak the language. They were essentially trying to kidnap these people and like take them to their cousin's house and then be shocked when they ran the fuck away. Yeah. Like, oh, I know where I am. Get out of here. Yeah,
I speak the same language as the people like 2 miles away in the forest.
Like, really? You thought, but that being said, Native people were still enslaved because the colonies had superior firepower, but their numbers weren't stable because they were so susceptible to European diseases.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. So what's interesting is that Virginians, they did not establish the institution of slavery to deal with their like labor crisis. The system was kind of open at this time.
Okay.
So in Virginia in 1619, when the first Africans were brought to the country, status and power depended more on your religion or if you had property than it did skin color.
Okay.
The colony was multi-ethnic. There was a lot of mixing of people. Race hadn't really been like conjured into being yet.
Sure.
So enslaved workers and indentured servants, they lived and worked under the same brutal conditions in the tobacco plantations.
Okay.
So early attempts at like driving a wedge between these like workers failed because they're just like, fuck out of here. Like, you're telling me this man over here, just because he has dark skin, like he's my enemy, not like you.
You're the one that's
we're both getting the shit end of the stick here.
Yeah.
So they're just like, fuck out of here. Like, I'm not like you. Yeah. I'm like him. Fuck.
Exactly.
So during this period, African and European workers, they ate, they drank, they socialized together. They went to church together. They had consensual sex.
Oh, my stars and garters.
Yep. They even ran away from their oppressors together.
Uh-huh.
In 1640, an African servant ran away and was sentenced by the Virginia courts to slavery for life.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was a period of time when just because you were African didn't mean you were enslaved.
Sure. Okay.
It lasted for a couple decades, but like this is that time.
Yeah.
So this guy, he was sentenced because they were caught, sentenced to slavery for life. And the two European indentured servants who ran away with him, a man and a woman, they just got 4 more years added to their servitude.
Okay.
So from time to time, indentured servants and enslaved people like together conspired to like violently overtake their like colonial masters.
Sometimes, as I would.
Yes, same. Sometimes they succeeded. However, when the plots were exposed, like when someone heard and like told, every time the sentence was death.
Wow.
Yeah, death. The indentured servants, men and women, they were hung.
Uh-huh.
But the enslaved Africans were always burned alive.
What?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
So even before we have this like racial caste system, there is already this like unequal punishment for the same crime happening.
Yeah, that's wild.
It's fucked up. So again, yeah, it's mess. So newspapers, they started running warnings to the quote ill disposed because it was so common for people, just regular people, to hide fugitives because it's like, fuck these people.
Ill disposed essentially just means lower class? Like
ill disposed, yeah, like lower class, less money.
Yeah.
So there would be ads, there would be signs like, don't do this, or there's going to be a fine. People are like, fuck out of here. So the only fear greater than an African revolt, of which there were many, was the fear that indentured servants, like Europeans, would join in the ranks and overthrow the ruling order. And, you know, they couldn't have that. So this is the vibe leading up to my scandal.
It's so wild how directly this ties to today. I keep seeing all these memes on social media about how, like, you have much more in common with homeless people than you do with, like, Jeff Bezos or Elon Musk.
Yeah.
And I think that that's what we need to remember again.
We need to remember. That because this is human nature to feel like you have in common with someone who is in the same position as you.
Yeah, just a one step down the ladder, one rung down the ladder, but you're way closer on that ladder
to them. It's not even close.
Yeah.
Michael Bloomberg has more in common than me than he does Bezos.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, it's stupid.
Yeah.
The gap.
No, 100%. Yeah.
So let's get into it. Nathaniel Bacon, what was his deal? So, spoiler alert, he was the fucking worst. Really, really terrible human. So he was born rich in 1647 in merry old England. He had some scandal like brewing. He had done some fraud and he kind of like the block got too hot. He had to get out. So his dad gave him money, like a shit ton of money, to move to Jamestown, like in exile. He's just like, okay, behave yourself over there. We have some friends on the ground. They'll hook you up, like just, you know, straighten up and fly right, essentially. So he gets across the pond and he's like a 20 something. He's very cunning. People like him. He like sprints up the local hierarchy, like the social ladder. He just like runs up it, basically. He was given two plantations on the James River.
Given. Just because he's rich?
So he was given it by the governor, a man named William Berkeley, who just so happened to be his cousin.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. He was given these two plantations and a seat on the local council, like the governor's council. He's not even a local, but he now is involved in local politics.
He literally just showed up and now just, he's running the show.
Yeah, so, you know, nepotism is alive and well in 1675. But this wasn't enough for the young Bacon. He was mad. He was salty that his plantations weren't big enough. His whole issue was that he saw very quickly like there was a strata.
Sure.
And he wasn't at the top of it.
Oh, what, he was pretty close to the top.
Oh, he was very close. He was an inch away from the top. He saw that these wealthy planters, they had these big tobacco plantations. And because of that, they could easily pay their colonial taxes. He could do the same. He could do the same. But he was saying that if he had even more land...
Okay, so save your money and buy some land like anyone else would do.
He's not everyone else. He was confused. He's just like, oh my God, not being the 1% is poverty. Like
2%?
He threw himself off.
Life is so hard.
It was hard. So he felt poor even though he was not. But for actually poor Virginians, times are actually pretty tough.
Sure.
Yeah. So tobacco prices had fallen recently because in Maryland and North Carolina, they started also producing.
Oh, so there's suddenly competition.
Gross. Again, poverty. Competition is fucking gross. So these farmers, they felt like they were already kind of struggling to pay their colonial taxes and like, you know, make ends meet. They wanted, like Bacon, to have more room to grow tobacco. So they were pushing the local government to allow them to expand westward into the frontier.
The frontier, yeah.
They were mad that when they tried to steal native land with violence, they received violence.
But just give it to me because I want it.
You know how they felt.
I asked meanly.
So when the colonists, when they pled to the governor for military support, he refused. He's like, no, I'm not going to do that. He had like a good thing going. This was like his second term. He had established trading ties with a local tribe. So he was dealing in fur as well as tobacco. So he was making all the money.
Sure.
So he wasn't trying to fuck up his bag.
It's not. Yeah, he's doing the right things for the wrong reasons.
Yes.
Yeah,
totally. The wrong reason. So he tried to balance like his needs, the needs of the colonists and also the surrounding native tribes. Like he was not trying to like turn over the apple cart.
I love that he only cared about the needs of the local tribes because he wanted his own money to stay safe.
Yes, exactly. So his attempt to like make everyone happy, of course, failed. You know, he set himself up for that. And at this time, he also used some like newly created trade rules to give more money to him and his friends. I don't want to get into it, I guess.
Yeah.
But he did something under the guise of government that he and like a select few could make a lot of money.
Doing.
So Bacon saw this as like intolerable. He said that it was really unfair. He was disgusted by what he saw as the governor's disloyalty and unfairness. everything you got is because of him, but you okay, go bitch. Off, sis.
Nobody had to give you this shit.
Right? So in March of 1676, he decided to start some shit. This is what happens, I think, when rich men aren't employed. Uh-huh. This is what they do. Uh-huh. So this motherfucker just decided that he was going to attack a friendly native tribe.
Oh, that sounds like a great idea.
He accused them of stealing his corn. Ain't no native want your raggedy ass corn, sir.
Seriously.
Yeah, so he uses this incident that totally happened, despite making negative sense, to petition the governor for a militia that he could lead. He wanted a commission.
He's like, hey, cousin Jerry, look over here.
Look what they did. They took my corn. Can I have an army?
My corn. Oh, my God.
So the governor, his cousin, basically told him to fuck off. Like, I've given you enough. Like, stop attacking these live your life.
Stupid corn.
They don't want it. Yeah. They have better corn. Of all things for them to steal of his. I know. Like, that's just hilarious to me.
They stole my wigwam.
That's funny. Yeah, it's the same. Yeah. It's nonsense. It never happened. So Berkeley told him to fuck all the way off, to get out of his face. Bacon responded, as you would imagine, with a mantrum. Oh. He decided that now he had the money to hire his own militia. He didn't want to do it, but
he could have used that money to buy some land. He could have. To grow some more fucking tobacco.
He could have. Jesus. But he didn't want to use his own money, but he's using his money for this. So drunk on brandy, like him and this band of merry men, they decided they were going to go south and just start fucking with local tribes, like just because they're drunk and they feel entitled to their land. So on their way, they met a group of friendly people called the Okanichi, and they asked for their help to fight another local tribe called the Susquehannocks. I don't know what reason they told them, but somehow the Okanichi were kind of like, okay, I guess, you know, we're allies. Like, if you need us to fuck them up, like, we'll help you, I guess. Mm-hmm. But instead of killing everyone, the Okanichi, they brought back captives.
Oh.
They didn't understand the assignment.
Because why would they? Yeah. Why would they?
Yeah. Just kill people to kill people.
Because that's not what you do.
No.
Yeah.
So Bacon and his men, they turned and shot all of the captives, and then shot all of the Okanichi, and then they burned their village.
What the fuck is wrong with you? You're pissed that you're only Michael Bloomberg rich and yes. not Jeff Bezos rich.
Yes.
And so you kill two communities full of yep. people.
You just got here, but you're really mad.
I cannot.
So in response, Berkeley declared Bacon a rebel and said that he was guilty of treason for what he had done. And he scheduled new elections because he wanted Bacon off this, you know, council that him on. You know, he thought that this would solve the problem for good. Little did he know that Bacon had already made a lot of friends on the council. Mm-hmm. So they voted his ass back on.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So he had these new, like, landowning friends, and they're just like, yeah, like, you're doing the things we want to do, but don't have balls to do because we're not the governor's cousin. Mm-hmm. We'd actually be killed for
exactly.
what...
Exactly. We would find ourselves in fucking prison or dead for doing this shit.
So he gets this position on this council, and I think there's, like, a gap in time between, like, when he starts to serve. Uh-huh. And he's like, okay, I know I'm going to be in trouble if I, like, try to go to my new job. So uh-huh. he hired 50 armed men to like escort him to the Jamestown Again, assembly.
You could use that money to buy some land.
So he headed to Jamestown to, you know, begin his new like government gig. The governor was not playing with him. He was arrested. Despite having all
Thank
these
God.
Men. Yeah, he was arrested. He was brought before the assembly, and Bacon decides that he's going to apologize. He got down on his hands and knees and apologized. And he promised, I guess, you know, that he wasn't going to do what he had been doing. Like, he was going to do better. Because the punishment for treason, which is what he was accused with,
sure,
is death.
Yeah, of course. He's like, wait a minute. Nobody told me that consequences existed. Nobody told me that causes had effects.
Yes.
I had to flee England.
It was in because Spanish. Of
consequences, but I don't know what you're talking about.
He gets down on his knees. He begs for forgiveness. The governor's like, okay, fine. Just like be good. But his like apology, it set off this chain of reaction in the assembly. Like there, it seems like there were plants there to ask the governor kind of on his behalf. Like, hey, can he have an army? Can he have this thing that he's been asking for? Yeah. So there's this huge demonstration. And eventually Bacon has to be removed from the assembly hall because people are like chanting, like, give him a commission.
So he's removed and killed. The end. End of story. And everyone lived happily ever
so
after.
He was really humiliated after this.
This man is thick. This man.
So a few weeks later, he decided that he was going to march to Jamestown with now 500 supporters he had gathered in demand to lead the colony into war against the native peoples.
I just don't understand.
Yeah. So from 50 paid men, he somehow got like 500 just like groupies, people who just joined him to join him. He's not paying these people. But he was really good at that like revolutionary talk.
You're mad at your fucking cousin.
They didn't do nothing but exist.
Have land.
Have land.
That's yeah, have the land. Bottom line is they have land.
He was good at getting people on his side and like pointing at the 1%, even though he, it's like you're so close to that, but
literally 2%.
But he became, yeah, some it's so weird. They thought of him as like a folk hero, and it's like he is not you, but okay. But he tapped into the discontent of many people at the time, like on the ground. This had already been brewing, this like class. Division, even though he's not in their class.
Yeah.
But his coalition, it consisted of two different groups. There was a smaller group of aristocrats like himself, who in their opinion had been excluded from like the upper echelon. Like this was like the 5% upset that they weren't the 1% getting all the cushy things.
And using the 95% to fight their battles.
Correct. So the much larger group consisted of farmers, former indentured servants, current indentured servants, and enslaved Africans who wanted to create a more egalitarian society, sadly at the expense of indigenous peoples. So these small farmers and like former indentured servants, both African and European, they complained that the colonial government wasn't really representing them. They weren't providing like adequately for their well-being, according to them. They complained that they were overtaxed, of course. The Europeans were big mad that the government refused to protect them when they attacked native people. A lot of former indentured servants also complained that they had not received the land that they were promised at the end of their servitude. Many of them were African. That didn't receive the land that they were supposed to. So they were mad. They were part of this group. Both currently indentured servants and former servants. Like everyone was treated really badly when they served for free.
Sure.
It was bad. Like they were whipped. They were like
Seven
poorly fed.
It's
a long time. Yeah. A long fucking time.
To be treated like dirt.
Like dirt. Yeah. The servants were required to work longer every year, it seemed. And the enslaved Africans, they were frequently punished just for no reason. So all of these men and women, because there were women who were servants. And I don't think Berkeley's group of rebels would have been 500 strong without women just talking to each other and talking to their husband. Like, hey, I heard from Sally that, you know, we're going to fuck shit up. Like, get in on it. Like, women are just really good at talking to each other.
Yeah.
So all of these people, they saw Berkeley's government as cliquish and corrupt because it fucking was.
If they had taken the chance to look that at the fact that he owned two plantations on the river and
moderately
was complaining
sized.
That he wasn't rich enough, nobody would have been fighting those battles with him. Jesus.
So with all these people behind him, the plan was to overthrow the colonial government and bring about a new, more collective social order. That's what he was preaching to these people. He summed up his list of grievances like he was Martin Luther with his like 95 theses. Like he like tacked it up somewhere, like just theatrics.
Good theatrics.
But I feel like this is a good place for a little break.
Thank God, because I am punchless. Wow, what a mess. I love this story.
Isn't it good?
All right, BRB.
I'm Natalie.
And I'm Cass.
And we're the hosts of Shared History,
a comedic history podcast exploring the stories of the often overlooked or underrepresented.
The people and events your history books may have glossed over, whitewashed, man-washed, or left out completely.
From the Mayan creation myth to the Deaf President Now movement of the 1980s.
From ancient scientist Avicenna to first female principal chief of the Cherokee Nation, Wilma Mankiller.
If you saw it in a footnote once,
or have never heard of it,
we are here to share it with you.
Join us in a rotating guest list featuring scholars, writers, teachers, entertainers, entrepreneurs, subject matter experts, and more.
Tune in to Shared History on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, you know the drill.
And follow us at SharedPod on Instagram and Twitter.
And as always,
share you later.
All right, we're back with fresh punch.
We are.
It's very tasty.
So, yeah, Bacon, let's get back to him. We love him.
We love to hate him.
We love to hate him. So Bacon and his rebels, now 500 strong, marched to Jamestown to confront Berkeley. There was a standoff. Like, each side were kind of egging on the other side to, like, I guess, be about that life.
Uh-huh.
So stupid. At one point, the governor ripped open his shirt, baring his chest.
The governor,
pointing at it, daring Bacon to shoot him in the chest.
What in God's name is happening?
Unlocking a masculinity so toxic that Bacon and his 500 men retreated, really fucking mad.
What? Not his chest. Retreat.
Well, I think they were afraid of shooting the governor having the crown. So they're like, okay, I guess we can't do shit. So they retreated. As they went through the countryside, they gained even more support, like telling their tale, being like, yeah, fuck this guy, let's get him.
Oh my God, you guys can't hear my eyes rolling. I need that sound effect of the eyes rolling across the table again. Tim, you know what to do.
Yes. So Berkeley, he accused the whole group of just being rebels, all of them, and accused Bacon of treason.
Facts.
Yet
facts.
Again.
Yeah.
Yet again.
Facts are facts, colonial America.
Bacon, he responded by saying that the governor had sold his friends, his country, and the liberties of his loyal subjects to the barbarous heathen. Both sides were pointing at each other, saying, like, you're trying to start a civil war. No, you're trying to start a civil war.
Bitch, the country doesn't exist yet. Civil war? Yes,
theatrics and hyperbole. So in September, matters came to a head when Bacon, he got word that the governor was going throughout the land as he was in recruiting supporters to his side.
God.
And he heard that he had returned to the capital and he was going to give like a final proclamation, essentially calling for the death of Bacon, but like for real this time.
I was just going to say, why doesn't he just have this man disappeared?
Their grandmother? I don't know. I don't know.
But grandmama would be upset.
Yes. I'm just picturing the woman from Downton Abbey.
Yeah.
Maggie who doesn't know what a weekend is?
Yes, the Dowager Countess.
Yes. So in response, like when Bacon and his men hear that like, oh, he's coming back and he's like going to say stuff about me, they like run to Jamestown, pillaging and messing up native people as they went. So awful. They run back to Jamestown on the night of September 19th. They burned the city to the ground.
Wow.
Left Eye style.
So, that's
yes,
that's vengeance.
Totally. So the governor, he escaped with his life and like some of his supporters. So Bacon would die 3 weeks later of dysentery.
Dysentery.
Yeah.
You fool.
What? You fool.
I mean, I not that it's foolish to die of dysentery, but like after all of this yeah. is how you die.
Yep. So his people, they fought on until the English ships, like, came to Jamestown and were, like, camped. So word had finally gotten back to the crown that Berkeley lost control of the capital.
Okay.
And they're like, okay, we need to send reinforcements. We need to shut this shit down.
Little did they know that the fool that ran the whole thing died because he dug his shitter too close to the water supply.
Yes. So he died. But the people, they kept fighting. The last group of 100 rebel like holdouts, like the diehards, it was 100 of them. 80 of them were African, 20 of them are European.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. There we go.
Fuck.
There we go. Uh-huh. So the rebellion, it failed in its goal to like overthrow the colonial government, but it showed the power of class solidarity. The unity between Africans and European workers terrified the colonial elite. News traveled far and wide quickly. And there was a fear that if these poor people were to unite again, like behind someone who wasn't a piece of shit, yeah, like a spoiled piece of shit, that they would be successful.
Uh-huh.
They would easily overtake them because they were such a small percentage of the population.
Absolutely.
So they had to find a way to make sure that it would never happen again.
And they did.
They did, yes.
Holy shit, you have broken me.
Yeah, this story is like, it explains, it's like the cheat code to our country. So the ruling class, they were so afraid of what the European servants could do, they slowly eliminated the system.
Sure.
Instead relying on enslaved Africans, uh-huh, and indigenous people for free labor. They also got fucking busy clearing native land of native bodies, uh-huh, to give to landless Europeans to just calm them. Trinkets. So within the next 25 years, the colonial government passed a series of laws designed specifically to privilege Europeans over, uh-huh, everyone else.
Yeah.
They became white. Africans became Negroes. Once Europeans were classified as white, they gained their freedom,
mm-hmm,
from bondage.
Yeah.
Freedom became associated with whiteness. And lifelong bondage became associated with blackness.
Wow. All for this fucking piece of garbage.
Yep.
That was only in it for himself.
Virginia codified our modern racial caste system in a series of laws called the Virginia Slave Codes of 1705.
Wow.
Have you heard of this?
No.
So I'm not going to read it all. I have like two short passages about them. And then, yeah, it was long and trash. So one section of the code read that all servants imported and brought into the country who were not Christians in their native country shall be accounted and be slaves. All Negro, mulatto, and Indian slaves within this dominion shall be held to be real estate.
Real estate.
Real estate. Their words.
Disgusting.
Untaxed real estate. Another section read, if any slave resist his master, correcting such slave, and shall happen to be killed in such correction, the master shall be free of all punishment, as if such incident never happened.
Mm-hmm.
So now any white person can kill any Negro person without any sort of consequences. Mm-hmm. Before, when Africans were just servants, they could go to court against their employer, just like the Europeans, and now they can't. After these laws, Negroes were no longer allowed to employ white servants as they once were. Good they were Lord. No longer allowed to own weapons as they once were.
Oh my God.
They weren't allowed to lift their hand against a Christian.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't allowed to go to church together anymore. They were punished by dismemberment, while white indentured servants could no longer be whipped. This was written into law that they could no longer be whipped. Negroes were deprived of property. They had to give their land to their neighbors, to their white neighbors. There were harsh penalties for miscegenation.
Even men who had already finished out their, yep, their terms.
Had to give it to their neighbors.
And then
after
what?
This law.
And then become slaves?
Yes.
Enslaved?
Enslaved. The ones that didn't run, yeah. Wow. Can you believe that? You couldn't give it to your family. You had to give it to your neighbor instantly after this law was written. It's mess. Yeah, so there were harsh penalties now for miscegenation. So there's consensual sex is done. Mm-hmm. People with any African heritage were defined as Negroes, mm-hmm, so as to become self-replicating commodity, essentially. Yeah. And release from slavery was now illegal in the Virginia colony.
Good Lord.
White supremacy was a law. So the ruling elite, they had bought the support of working class white people by offering them privileges in a political system that, you know, I guess raised both of their statuses.
Sure.
Yeah, the tobacco planters and the colonial government, they successfully divided white workers from black workers.
Yeah.
They prevented a sense of class consciousness that had been human nature prior to this. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And as time went on, because their material conditions were so different, they just weren't allowed to be in the same area anymore.
Yeah.
They were like prevented from mixing.
Sure.
With this law. Mm-hmm. So white people were less likely to risk their, you know, their privileges to help black people as they once did.
Yeah, not only did they prevent them from becoming friends with each other, but they also set up these boundaries between, yeah, you're not the 5%, but you're above those guys.
Yes. You are the foundation. You stand upon them. Once white only, like, enslaved patrols were instituted mm-hmm. in 1727, poor white men now got paid to terrorize black people. It was a wrap. It was like everyone was the NYPD. And it is why we are where we are now. It started this early.
It's wild that it's literally
yeah.
to preserve class superiority.
Yep.
They have found ways to make poor white people
believe that they're partners in this.
With the rich people rather mm-hmm. than the poor black people.
Yeah. They invented it and they enshrined it into law.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yes, it's on paper, but that doesn't make it real.
No.
It's make-believe.
Yeah, it's make-believe. But over time, the law, like, it just becomes the way.
No.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
100%. They feel superior because they do have superiority
yeah.
and they have
power. And it becomes internalized. The superiority that they feel, even if they can be poor as shit, at least they're not black.
And just as general wealth compounds over the generations, so does this hatred. And
yep.
But if you trace it all back, it really is just fucking make-believe. Mm-hmm. And again, like I said in the beginning of this story, you have way more in common with those people than you do with the rich people.
Yep. And it all started with Bacon's Rebellion. Monica Gisolfi, she wrote a book called Bacon's Rebellion, Colonial Society and Politics. In it, she wrote that Bacon's Rebellion accelerated the codification of chattel slavery in Virginia. The specter of a roving, landless class of free men led colonial authorities to view slavery more favorably, believing that it ensured a more stable, free society. Stable and free for whom?
For the rich.
Yeah.
For people with money and land. And power and influence.
Yeah. So if ever someone questions whether this country was founded on the genocide of indigenous people and the enslavement of Africans, please just gesture to reality and point them to this this episode of the podcast. Yeah, I would say a lot more, but I'm going to leave it for a mini-sode. I have like a story that came up in my research. I want to close this out with another quote from the late, great Queen Toni Morrison. She's so good. I think she said this. I don't think she wrote it. I think she was doing a speech somewhere. She said, "If there were no black people here in this country, it would have been balkanized. The immigrants would have torn each other's throats out as they have done everywhere else. But in becoming an American from Europe, what one has in common with the other immigrant is contempt for me. It's nothing else but color. Wherever they're from, they would stand together. They would say, I'm not that. So in a sense, becoming an American is based on an attitude, an exclusion of me. It wasn't negative to them. It was unifying. When they got off the boat, the second word they learned was nigger. Every immigrant knew he would not come here at the very bottom. He had to come above at least one group, and that was us." Jesus. And that's on Factuality.
Bottom line. That is.
Yeah, period.
This entire country.
Yep. Yeah. This is the foundation of our country. Bacon's Rebellion. Everything,
like,
there's a thread
that
comes from here.
Yeah. Irish people, Italian people, people who came here at literally the very
bottom. Yeah.
And we're told, you're not at the bottom. Mm-hmm. You're one step above
yes,
the bottom.
You're part of this.
Yeah. And eventually, if you're good, you can become one of us.
Yeah. If you're good.
And not one of them.
Yes. If you're good and you're an American and you do what we do, as in oppress others, you can be like us. So yeah, that's Bacon's Rebellion. I had heard this scandal just referenced. I I heard people talking about it just like in passing. And I'm just like, what is this? And I looked into it. I'm like, oh, it does explain everything.
Yeah.
It explains everything.
Literally everything. Like, from the very beginning.
Podcast over.
And it's all because of one random fucking turd that just wanted more than he was already given for doing nothing
warring
for free.
With his cousin. They're both trying to secure their...
Who gave him?
Yeah.
His cousin who gave him everything
he had. Yeah, everything he had. Spoiled, entitled, violent man who just wanted it all just because...
I have often thought, like, if I had a time machine, if somebody plopped a time machine in front of me, I would go back. And there are so many people whose lives
Reagan.
I would... Reagan.
Yeah.
Mitch McConnell. But you know what? No. Yeah. I need to go way back, way further.
Way further.
Yeah. I need to sink Bacon's ship before he gets here.
Yeah. No, this was the beginning. Yeah. And it's because at the end, it was more like Africans than Europeans. And they saw how they could coordinate and that there was class solidarity. Yeah, this story was really sad to research.
Yeah, I can't
like,
imagine.
The truth of it all was like really hard, but at the same time, it's a story that needs to be told. People need to know where it started, and it started with Bacon's Rebellion.
Well, thank you for telling that. That I mean, you.
I did my deed for the year.
I'm sure that people heard the moment where my brain exploded. There was that, like, wow. Wow.
I remember the wow, and I'm like, oh, it all hits you.
Yeah, I literally, my brain just figured it all out.
You did. You're like,
okay, this country is bullshit.
I mean, that was every other thought as I was writing my outline. Like, these motherfuckers.
Uh-huh. Literally, racism was invented to keep rich people rich.
Yep.
And poor
the
people
only reason.
Today, 350 years later, and poor people today are still like, no, no, no. The black guy next door is the enemy. And those rich people, we're on the same side.
Yeah, I'm just not there yet, but I'm getting there.
Yeah.
And this man isn't preventing me from getting there at all.
Exactly.
As I was researching, I saw this one article that was talking about the tying indentured servitude to college like loans.
Oh my God.
And I'm like, yes, I'm not even going to like click on this because this is going to explode my mind.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Literally. Yes, yeah. Of course.
Oh, there's so much with this. Yeah.
Okay. I think it's time.
Yeah.
Damn, this punch is tasty. I hope that you guys try and make a batch for yourselves, even though you probably don't have any ambergris at home.
If you do, I'm worried about you.
Go comb the beach. Well, our drinks are empty, so I think we're fucking done.
Yeah.
My head has exploded, so I think we're done.
I have hurt you.
Yes.
With the truth.
With the truth. You beat me with the truth.
I did.
America's history is juicy. We just add dark rum, raw, unrefined sugar, and some lime juice.
A little bit of nutmeg.
Thank you guys so much for listening to Beyond Reproach. This has been Tux Lurzel.
Stephanie Domingo, and I'm sorry. Sorry, not sorry.
We have... No, thank you. A thousand thank yous.
A thousand thank yous.
Turning of the hand. Yes. Literally.
The turning of the hand.
That's what it is.
It is.
Thank you to Tim Clough, our editor, sound engineer, and the Podfather. We could not do this without him. That's it.
That is it.
Happy Black History Month, everyone.
Happy Black History Month. Go out there and learn some things.
Learn some things. Learn some critical race theory.
Yes.
Goodbye.
Bye. Beyond Reproach is proudly recorded in Bushwick, Brooklyn, on land belonging to the Lenape Nation. Please note we are not historians. We are just a couple of drunks who never shut up and love history. Full list of all source information can be found in the show notes on our website. Please take a moment to rate, review, and subscribe. Written reviews are especially important. If you like us, please do one of two things. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, or send this episode to a friend, family member, or someone who you think would be into it. Make sure you follow us on Instagram because we post our cocktail recipes the Thursday before each full episode. Please drink along with us if you are not driving. We also have a shop on beyondreproachpod.com. Get your merch, brand yourselves. We have exclusive content on Patreon where you can directly support the production of our show.